your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Mind, Brain, and Body with Dr. Michael John Kell. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the host, guest, and callers. Now helping you live a more productive and fulfilling life, Dr. Michael John Kell.
Hey, good morning, and thank you once again for taking time out of your day to tune into our show. And as always, we're dedicated to trying to help you improve your health, wealth, wisdom, and find a very remarkable life. Today's topic, I think, is a very, very important one, and we're going to be talking with one of the world's clinical experts in this area, and we're going to be discussing chronic fatigue syndrome, or kind of like what I like to call it, chronically sick hypothalamic syndrome. And it's an important issue because probably 12% of Americans suffer in some form of this disorder. And my guess is that these hypothalamic disorders probably manifest in different ways in different people. And when they talk about like sick thyroid syndrome and things like that, it's probably a manifestation of this at some level. But I think you need to listen, and I think you need to pay attention because it could happen to you. And I just want to mention a website before I actually get to our guest. And it's www.vitality101.com. And that's the website for Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, MD, who is a board-certified internist and not only a leading researcher in this field, who is very thorough, it seems to me, but also somebody who actually suffered from it when he was in medical school, so he can talk both from a professional point of view and a personal point of view. So good morning, Jacob, and thank you for getting up early in Hawaii to be with us.
That's always a pleasure. Glad to be with you today.
And as I explained, it's basically just a little discussion show between you and I, and since you're the expert, you should be discussing things more than I. But I looked through your book, the most recent one, which I guess is the third edition, called From Fatigue to Fantastic, which I recommend to all the readers out there, because it's a very good discussion of what chronic fatigue syndrome is. But more importantly, it gives you a good breakdown of Jacob's treatment program, which he calls SHIN, which I guess is dealing with sleep, hormones, infections, and
nutrition.
Thank you.
And in fact, it's now become the SHINE protocol. One of my patients put exercise on the end of it and made it shine, so it would seem fitting for the patient to finish it off.
So, can we just maybe start with, as you and I talked before, I'd like to talk a little bit about the biology of this disorder. You know, probably with this show, and maybe we can get together in the very, very near future based on your schedule to talk a little bit more about the best ways to attack it to return people to normal health. But from my memory, it sort of seems like chronic fatigue syndrome kind of became popular, so to speak, maybe in the early 70s. Is that about right? Or, I mean, terms of being known, people known about it?
This process has been around with us for hundreds of years. If you have people like Nobel of Nobel Prize fame, a lot of people who basically have burnt the candles at both ends have come down with similar processes. But it's not until the last 30 years or so, as society has been speeding up, diet's been going down, sleep's been going down, stress has been increasing, infections have been increasing, toxins in the environment have been increasing, that we've seen this really skyrocket. They didn't put a name to it until, about the 70s, and then the 80s a little bit more, as we got fibromyalgia coming in as a term. But it's been with us forever, but it's skyrocketing now. It's gone up by 400 to 1,000% in the last 10 years on four different studies around the planet.
Is it worse in the United States and Europe than it is in some of the calmer countries?
No. Strangely enough, we see the same amounts, whether it's in England, Bangladesh, Germany, Africa, Turkey. It seems to be remarkably constant around the planet and growing at the same speed.
Wow. And one of the things I was doing a little review on endocrinology this morning, after I read your book yesterday, at least parts of it. And, I was really, really impressed when you go back and, look at, sick thyroids, and and review the biochemistry and the neurology of hypothalamic connections in our body,
mm-hmm.
and how this really seems like, as you mentioned in your book, it really seems like a sick hypothalamus.
Mm-hmm. It very much is, and more research is pointing to this. We've been doing the research now literally for decades on the area, And in fact, one most recent double-blind study that we had done focused specifically on treating the hypothalamic dysfunction using the SHINE protocol to restore energy production. And what you found was that 91% of patients improved with that treatment versus only about 30% of the placebo group. It was a very marked effect, average 90% increase in quality of life. So we know that this is a key player, and it's a key control center in the body. If you think about it, Michael, the hypothalamus controls sleep. So people have the paradox of being unable to sleep even though they're exhausted. And that's a hallmark for your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
If you're exhausted and can't sleep and it doesn't go away with vacation, you've got this process, most likely. If you ache all over, you also have fibromyalgia. And what people need to know is that energy crisis, you treat the energy with the SHINE, hypothalamic function comes back online. The problem often goes away and certainly improves in the vast majority of people.
I was actually impressed with the progress y'all made since I first heard about this a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. But just for those listening out there, Jake, can you kind of review the hypothalamus for us?
So, well, the hypothalamus is a control center sitting in the brain just above the pituitary. It controls sleep. It controls almost your entire hormone system through the pituitary gland. So it controls your thyroid, adrenals, estrogen, testosterone, progesterone. Controls the peeing hormone, antidiuretic hormone, which is why most people with this illness, technical term is, they drink like a fish and pee like a racehorse. It's really remarkable. I'll see people go through gallons of water a day and still be dehydrated. And it also controls autonomic function, which is blood pressure, pulse, sweating. One reason people tend to have low blood pressure, sometimes dizzy when standing, break into these sweats in strange places. And most of the reason, if you want to look at it from a functional point of view, this center also controls your temperature regulation in your body. It's what keeps you at 98.6 degrees, which has become abnormal in our current society. Most people are running lower now. And we'll talk about why in a moment. That has to do with the weight gain and the obesity as well. But if you think about it, outside of air, the quickest way to die is to not maintain temperature control. If you didn't have it, you'd be out in a 40-degree day, your temperature dropped to 90 pretty quickly, you'd be dead. So the body puts a very high priority on maintaining temperature regulation. And autonomic function and hormonal function are what control temperature, so it's wrapped in the same area. And then during sleep, your temperature has to drop. So my guess is, and again, you hate to think teleologically or in terms of function in the body and from the way we're taught, but I find that it does make some sense. But this would explain why all of these are wrapped in the same area. It's a very major control center, but it uses an enormous amount of energy for its size, more than any other area of the body. And because of that, when energy goes offline, we develop an energy crisis in your body, which is what these illnesses are, that area goes offline first.
In your experience, I mean, when you talk to patients that, you know, finally decided they have, you know, chronic fatigue syndrome or some, you know, variant of that, is temperature, when you go back in historically, is the sleep that gets disturbed first, do you think, or do you think the temperature system, or are the same time?
It can go in any of the directions. It really depends which area goes offline first. It's not a homogeneous structure, the gland. But the key thing to look at first is going to be the sleep. The best early warning sign for this disease is when your sleep starts to go down and that you can't fall asleep even though you're tired. That should tell you that you're getting ready to, as I like to tell my patients, blow a fuse. The hypothalamic function is a fuse. Mm-hmm. And that's the time to really take measures to cut back at work for a while, take a vacation, optimize nutrition, optimize sleep, even if you need to take medications, herbal remedies, whatever it takes, make the time for sleep. Pamper yourself a bit, because that's the first warning usually that trouble's on the way. This is not necessarily so in people who get the drop-dead flu is what blows their fuse, these acute viral infections. But in those who have some ongoing stress, sleep going down is usually the first sign.
Tell me if the following statement is true, if you would be so kind. But it kind of sounds like when you read the symptomology, in the sign complex they have, it almost sounds like it's similar to like, you know, it's like as if you got the flu, and your body doesn't know you got over it, mm-hmm. and it starts maintaining. You know, persisting with these biological changes. Is mm-hmm. that all true? Or
absolutely, because there's several reasons behind that. If you look at the research on people who get the flu virus, along with several other viruses, directly suppress hypothalamic function. And apparently it does this because it affects the energy furnaces in the body called the mitochondria. Many viruses will go ahead and not totally shut them down, but take them over and kind of suppress them. And so you'll see hypothalamic dysfunction in the flu. And in fact, if you give people a little bit of hydrocortisone or Cortef, very, 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 very low dose, just to bring levels back up to normal, many of the flu symptoms resolve. The low cortisol causes other, what are called cytokines and interferon and such. Some go up, some go down. And it very much does mimic the flu. But as you noted, it doesn't go away like the flu does unless you treat it.
So you think it's, it'd be teleological here to you. But it almost sounds like, when you get sick, it's almost like, because the mitochondria get depressed because mitochondria really come from prokaryotes, as you well know, evolutionarily.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like the body wants to slow down metabolism when we get sick, probably to suppress virus reproduction and bacterial reproduction.
That's a big part of it. But the other piece of it, Michael, is that it has trouble dealing with the free radicals, and the oxygen becomes very pro-oxidative and makes a lot of free radicals. And it is almost a defensive mechanism on the body's part to protect yourself against the free radical production from the burning of oxygen for energy. So it can be a defensive part on the mechanism on the body's part. And in chronic fatigue syndrome, a key point that I tell people is that this illness is not the enemy. If chronic fatigue syndrome is like blowing a fuse in your home. It's a defensive mechanism on your body's part to take you out of the game in the face of overwhelming stress so you don't hurt yourself. So like blowing a fuse, it's a protective mechanism. But also like blowing a fuse, if you don't know that there's a circuit box, it's pretty useless because there's no lights. So the trick is to know that your body is giving you a warning, but also how to restore energy production and get rid of the things that drain energy, which come back to the SHINE protocol, S-H-I-N-E, and you'll notice that I is for infections. And there's a host of infections, many viral infections, HHV-6, but just really there's over a dozen infections that need to be looked for and when present, eliminated.
If we're experiencing the same patients, what percentage of patients probably had some pre-existing infection?
Well, many of them have yeast overgrowth or candida from all the sugar and the antibiotics in our lives these days. So a very common trigger would be yeast overgrowth. Parasites are common as well. So in those cases, it often is a pre-existing situation that left the person on the ropes in terms of energy production so that any of a number of stresses could come by, even a minor fender bender accident after a pregnancy injury, so a host of things, so toxic chemical exposure, toxic boss exposure. And any of those things can push people over the edge because they have these infections. In other cases, the infection came in as the first thing, the HHV-6 or other infections. Usually it comes on a host that's already stressed because most of these infections are not weird, bizarre infections. They're common infections that hit a host that's already energetically stressed, been working too hard, eating poorly, poor sleep, and that's why they blow the fuse.
So I guess they end up having a chronic inflammatory condition, so to speak?
No. it's an immune activation followed by immune exhaustion. But the term inflammatory, and there is arguments in the field about this, to give the benefit of the doubt with it. But if you look at the SUD rate, which is a measure of inflammation, it's actually low in most people, around 0 to 5 in most people with this illness, and most people are running about 10. On the other hand, if you look at CRP, another measure of inflammation, it tends to be elevated, often even with the SUD rate being low. So what we have is a selective activation of some parts of the immune system, selective exhaustion of other parts of the immune system. So I don't like to use the word inflammation because it's not accurate. But you have basically an immune system that's gone nuts and then gave up.
Are the patients still producing abnormal cytokines and stuff to keep?
Absolutely. As I mentioned, many of the interferons, for example, tend to be up. You'll see changes in a whole host of the cytokines, and there's a lot of work being done on that. To me, that's like going after the ripples in the pond. I'd rather to go after the pebble that makes them. And when you restore the hormonal function and eliminate the infections, the cytokine changes will tend to resolve. but there's excellent work being done also with VEGF, C3, C4, in the complement, A in the complement systems. In fact, probably it's going to turn out to one of the best tests available for Lyme disease, because testing for Lyme disease is horrible. In terms, in the British Medical Journal, it's described as no better than tossing a coin. In terms of accuracy, it'll miss it 50% of cases, and when it's positive, it often is not Lyme's. But if it's complement, if the C3A and C4A blood tests are both elevated, that's one of the best indicators for chronic Lyme disease. And that's a research that's now, there's been early and also long-term studies now published on that.
So, do you think the parts of the immune system that remain dysfunctional, you know, and hyperactive a little bit, you know, and the hyperactive stuff, you think that's, is that being maintained, you think, by the hypothalamus, direct, or is it, how does that work?
I think the immune system is being thrown off by chronic infections and adrenal insufficiency and nutritional deficiencies. One of the key things that we forget about in this whole area is nutrition. Zinc, for example, is critical for immune function, and you'll see a host of abnormalities. If you look at a genetic zinc disease called acrodermatitis enteropathica, you'll see a host of abnormalities that are associated with a zinc deficiency. AIDS is a chronic infection that drives zinc levels as low as in that genetic disease. You see the same immune defects, and in chronic infections with chronic fatigue syndrome, you see very low zinc levels as well. So we sometimes forget the simple things to look for. It may not be the infection, but a side effect of the infection and dropping nutrients that control immune function. So the key with these patients is, you know, because I'd like to just review this for a moment for the listeners.
Whatever, yeah. Good.
You know, if you have chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, tired, achy, brain fog, can't sleep, these are the hallmarks. If you're exhausted and can't sleep and it doesn't go away with vacation, you basically got the process. It represents an energy crisis in your body, and you can drain energy from any of a number of ways. So like blowing a fuse, there's hundreds of ways to trigger it. And the keys to restoring energy production to turn that hypothalamic circuit breaker back on are the letters SHINE, S-H-I-N-E, sleep, hormonal support, infections, nutritional support, and exercise as able. And I emphasize as able. And then once you do these things, people get better. So the infections are one piece of the puzzle. But people can come onto this merry-go-round from any of a number of places, Michael. Many people just have sleep disorders that will trigger it, like sleep apnea, upper airway resistance syndrome, restless leg syndrome. And you don't need REQUIP for restless leg syndrome. To me, that's an example of medical economics winning over medical sanity. It's just it's just nuts how much medicine is driven by the money these days instead of by the science and just basic common sense. If people just recognize that they have an energy crisis, they have to stop the usual CFS response to being exhausted, which is to redouble their efforts, and recognize tired means rest. This is an important point.
And nutrition and hormones.
All of the things. So what we'll go through today is a very simplified program for how people can, not just sick, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, but people with pain in general, people who have this run-of-the-mill fatigue. What are the simple things that people can do to really turbocharge their energy production and feel great? And for pain, it's important to recognize that pain is not the enemy. We think of pain as, you know, oh, my God, you got pain. Let's just get rid of the pain. But pain is like the oil light on your body's dashboard. Right. It's your body's way of saying that something desperately needs attention. So you go to the doctor and say, that flashing red light is annoying me. And the doctor says, no problem. Puts a Band-Aid over it and says, is that better? You go, yeah. Next day your motor burns out, and you wonder, well, damn, what bad luck. I have a flashing light and the motor burning out all 2 days. What a coincidence. You know, it's pain is your body's way of saying something needs attention, and it usually boils down to the same energy issues because muscles get stuck in a shortened position and pull on tendons when they don't have enough energy. Think rigor mortis. Think writer's cramp. Muscles don't get loose. They get locked in a shortened position. So you'll find that with the SHINE protocol we're going to talk about today, a lot of your day-to-day aches and pains will go away, even for what I call the walking wounded. Energy will go up. but also for those of you with CFS and fibromyalgia. It's not a cure for everybody, but it's effective treatment for the vast majority of you.
Let me ask, this is, I mean, your other book I don't have in front of me, but it's, you know, about how to deal with, you know, pain in, you know, in a nice holistic way, I'm sure. But I used to do pain meds for years and years, and, you know, I ended up doing methadone primarily. It's a big beginning point, but then we move on to, you know, nutrition and everything else. But you know, after a number of years, I became impressed with this following situation, is that even though I was getting, like, the dumps from everybody, you know, I was the last guy in Atlanta. You have to go through Emory and all these fancy, expensive places, multiple surgeries and things. And, you know, our approach was kind of, in a sense, simple-minded because we did nutrition, we did a little counseling, we did minor medications, you know, used what was cheap for people and made good sense biologically, you know, metabolically. But what I was impressed with is that I swear that the majority of patients that I saw that had chronic pain is average 10 years, but let's say after like 6 months or a year, is that very few of them, I think, had any injury left over at all. You know, and some have nerve damage and things, but it almost seemed like the brain was maintaining the state, you know, which brings up either pain memory or brings up, you know, something what you're talking about in chronic fatigue syndrome here, is that the system has been displaced so far away, you know, they're not eating right and they're not exercising as they can tolerate. They're, you know, having delusions all the time about their pain. And with this whole system is in similar and chronic pain problems, oftentimes, it's, the system's just been pushed so far away that unless you return the nutrition, return at your SHINE program, it won't get better.
It's amazing how much the body can achieve balance if you give it the basic nutrition it needs. It's amazing how it can get homeostasis back to where it belongs. But there are some cases where things are pulled so out of whack, so to speak. The muscles have been shortened to the point that other muscles get involved, and you have the some of the ligament structures and the fascial planes, and they get pulled out of place. And you really need to have things put back in balance beyond what the body is able to do on its own. There's some very good body work techniques, myofascial release, Traeger. If you have somebody who does Rolfing who's good and won't kill you with it, that's very good to help restore balance in the body on a structural level while we're dealing with the metabolic issues that cause the muscles to release and for the pain to go away. So there are many things, and that's, I view CFS as the same thing. Chronic fatigue syndrome is when your body has lost the ability to restore balance on its own. Like blowing a fuse, again, even if you unplug the five blow dryers that blew the fuse, the circuit breaker doesn't go back on by itself. And in chronic fatigue syndrome, same way, if you eliminate the trigger of the stress, these people have gone vacation, so to speak, they're disabled for 3 years and they're still exhausted. So CFS, fibromyalgia, is when the body has moved to extreme point where it can't right itself on its own without help. But again, given the proper help, it's very amenable to recovery.
I mean, since that's, I mean, overall system failure, so to speak, versus maybe a chronic pain problem, which has a lot of the similar things, but hasn't probably progressed as far.
And it's more localized, a more localized phenomenon in many people, yes. Chronic pain can be a milder form of fibromyalgia, many chronic pains. But if time allows today, we can go through arthritis, disc disease, migraine headaches, and I'll give people a quick natural formula for getting rid of each of those.
Let's mention those. Since you brought it up, let's talk about it.
Okay. Well, let's start with that disc disease. How many people have you seen having worked with pain who were sent for surgery for disc disease, for back pain, neck pain? But what they don't tell us is that if you look at the research, and this is in studies of over 6,000 patients now, if you give intravenous colchicine, it's an old herbal remedy turned prescription decades ago, once a week, 1 milligram, more is not better, once a week for 6 weeks, the disc pain will go away in over 75% of cases because it gets in, it's a mitotic spindle inhibitor. It inhibits inflammation in the disc space. And the pain from the disc is not because the nerve is being pushed on by the bone or the disc itself. It's because the jelly inside the disc is very inflammatory. That jelly acts as a shock absorber for the disc. And when it busts out of the disc, it triggers inflammation, and it's one of those free radical chain reaction events, again, that keeps going and going until somebody turns it off. And that inflammation causes swelling, which then pinches the nerve. You knock out the inflammation, pain goes away, and it stays gone. And we've treated numerous people with this, and it's been successful in the vast majority of them, especially when you add the IV nutrients like magnesium and B vitamins at the same time. So it needs to be given IV. About the fifth or sixth dose, people see the pain goes away and then it stays gone. So now if people have nerve drop, you know, foot drop and nerve damage, that's a different thing, go for the surgery. But otherwise, just see IV colchicine, find a good holistic doctor, they'll do it. The American Academy of Pain Management has over 1,000 pain specialists. The American Board of Holistic Medicine has over 1,000 holistic physicians. These have websites online, so you can find people to give this treatment. You don't need the surgery. But the doctors won't hear about it because it's too cheap. I mean, it's $3 a dose retail times six doses. I think it just went up a little bit to $9, but nobody's going to pay to get this information to the physicians.
Hey, if they had paid $9, probably do better because it costs more. But actually, now you bring up, you know, the Academy of Pain Management stuff, because I'm a member, you know, been a member, like, the day those guys started, probably, you know, took the, you know, their pain course up at the University of Pacific, you know, and stuff. And, you know, and I was at a meeting one day, it's off the side, but this is one of my pet peeves. So I was at a meeting one time with the American Academy of Pain Medicine, which is only physicians only, at least as far as I know today. You know, and some of the, like, quite a few people are in both the groups and stuff, and, you know, they're bitching about, you know, how to design a system to, you know, follow up chronic pain patients to, you know, to use evidence-based medicine. You know, and, you know, as you know, the American Academy of Pain Management, which is multidisciplinary, which is important for, you know, with people who are ill, period. You know, everybody can't do, no one person can be everything for everybody. You know, it already worked out something. You know, and so, you know, so they're complaining. So I go, why don't you guys go talk to these guys? You know, half the members here are probably members of both. Man, they got pissed at me. You know, because, oh, no, they're no doctors. They're not all doctors. Blah, 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 blah. Okay? So I said, you guys are nuts.
A little arrogance on our part.
Yeah, I said, you know, what helps the patients is what we want to do. Because, one, in the end, you get paid more anyway. And, two, you feel better about your job. And, three, patients are less sick and everybody's better. And it's just... You know, I don't know. I don't think it's inherent in doctors, but you know, even with the training, you know, they really train you to be arrogant and really close-minded and linear vision, which is like the last thing you want in a doctor.
Yes. Well, we lose the art of medicine because we're so focused on the evidence-based medicine part. But let me give you a little statistic about evidence-based medicine. The studies done using evidence-based medicine have proven that evidence-based medicine on its own without the art of medicine does not work. Now, they don't mention those studies. You know, they use their own technique to prove, oh, this doesn't work. And if you look at studies that are paid for by the drug companies, which are virtually all of them these days, they have a 400 to 2,000% probability of not being accurate because of the bias. And these have been shown in JAMA and other journals, which means it's impossible to get a statistically significant or really clinically meaningful study if it's paid for by the drug company, because you have no idea if it's valid or not. It's a 20 times, one study took studies that are paid for by the drug company versus not, and the ones paid for by the drug company, given the same results, were 20 times more likely to report it being a positive study than if it was not paid for by the drug company. So we're talking about evidence-based medicine, forgetting that we live in a milieu where it's so scarred by economic interest. And there's nothing wrong with money, but it's really skewing the evidence and making it, you really have to be the patient advocate and look at the data and see if the study really says what it says it says. So for us to be arrogant towards chiropractors and naturopaths, especially four-year naturopaths.
And naturopaths are very good. They're my favorite guys.
Yeah, especially from the four-year colleges. I mean, they're very well-trained in the science. But the arrogance is going to be part of what's going to be the downfall of medicine, because with the arrogance, we're not adapting as we need to be. But that's okay.
Because I think, you know, in the area you work in, the area I work in, I mean, they're probably, in a sense, the same thing, but they're different. This is a funny story, but like I said, I used to get everybody's dumps, okay, you know, in Atlanta, you know, around the southeast.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the last guy. So I used to tell patients, look, I'm the last guy. You better get better. You know? it started out as a methadone clinic, so it has all these rules, and I figured these rules are good because they're structuring, helping restructure patients because their life is so chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important to, you know, restructure, so do this. And, you know, so it's like everybody's coming with 10-year problems, major problems. Everybody's failed. Everybody's, you know, and it's not that many more new things you can do. And the funny part is that just by getting the patients in on a regular basis, teaching them how to control their medicine, seeing them, like, every day if you need to, you know, in a nice parental environment,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, and you know, with the prescription of methadone up front, because you got to do something for them for the hurting part. And so what I discovered was that once you explain to the patient the difference between hurting and pain, you know, pain and suffering,
mm-hmm.
that hurting is what the medicine deals with.
Mm-hmm.
Psychology is a different area, and we can deal with that a little bit later, but let's get the hurt front. It would take us like 2.5 weeks to have these people basically in a normal mental state. I mean, somebody's a little bit depressed, but at least the hurting's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, using methadone and just low therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it used to drive me nuts that these other doctors just don't spend time with their patients.
Mm-hmm. And they don't
care in a caring
way. They don't even touch them.
No, and it's just like if the doctor cares about you and cares that you do well, in a sense, you know, people do really, really well.
Yes.
The mind's so powerful to mm-hmm. help you get better or stay worse.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't deal with it, you stay worse.
You just described the art of medicine in addition to the science, and it makes all the difference.
The art's the key.
Oh, that's absolutely, because, again, if you don't do that, you're missing a big part of the puzzle. You know, the difference between pain and suffering. Pain is just like hot, cold, wet. It's a sensation. How it's interpreted in terms of suffering relates to fear, hopelessness, many of these other things. And as you help people get through the psychological part of the issue, the fear goes down. The pain goes down. You certainly treat, it's never acceptable to leave somebody in chronic pain. You treat the underlying processes. Not hard to do. And, you know, the narcotics, you know, we get into this whole booga booga, you know, on narcotics, it's so much solace if somebody has a character flaw. It's like saying diabetic on insulin, how dare you be on insulin? You have a character flaw. It's like, you know, people need it. But what we find is probably less than 10% of people with chronic pain need the narcotics, because you can get them pain-free by treating the underlying cause of the pain. We talked about Colchicine for disc disease instead of narcotics. You know, for arthritis, you know, I see some people coming on the pain, on the narcotics for that, or for the migraines, and you don't need those most of the time. You can, you know, sometimes you do for the migraines in short term, but migraines are, I don't want to say laughingly easy to prevent.
Well, they are.
They are.
I know. People go, like, I got another story about that one, but I'll save it for later. But you're right, because, you know, when people, I mean, they're all, like, dependent on narcotics when we saw them anyway. So we have to sort of wean that part away, because that is a bothersome, you know, trait, and most people won't agree to let the symptoms go. But it's always like a mediator, you know. It's like a little, you're giving, like, a little care. It's like giving a kid, you know, giving a little cookie to somebody and encourage them to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get the cookie, and it works better, and then you eventually can take the cookie away because you get a more nourishing food.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people, you know, come in, and maybe it'd be 6 months or a year, and you wean them off the medicines as they do the psychotherapy, because they got to do the psychotherapy and they do the nutrition, and, you know, and if they need the body rebalance, they'd be rolfed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that takes some time,
mm-hmm.
you know, particularly when people are overly sensitive about hurting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just this whole, you know, kind of simple, very simple-minded approach.
Well, it's
like, very effective to be holistic.
Well, it's like having a whole toolkit. You know, medicine basically is like a 500,000 doctors walking around with nothing but hammers of different sizes, and whatever they see, they whack. You know, and if you happen to need a screwdriver and you just go whack with holistic medicine, you have the whole toolkit, and you'll see in the Pain Free 1-2-3 book, I talk about medications as well. And because they're important tools. We talk about the natural things first because they're safer and, frankly, more effective. And it's funny, I was on one of the national news networks a little while ago, and right before I went on, they had a segment on doing major face surgery to decrease migraines by 50%. Being done down at the...
You're kidding.
No, and I was in a Texas university and doing major, cutting up big chunks of the face muscles to get a 50% drop in migraines. And I had to bite my tongue because it's tacky when you go on, you know, these places to diss the person who was on right before you. But vitamin B2, 400 milligrams, and even less probably, in several double-blind studies have been shown to decrease migraines by 67%. Yeah, 5-10 cents worth of vitamin B2 a day. It takes 6 weeks to kick in because, again, the body takes about 6 weeks to shift metabolic gears. But if you take the nutritional support, the Pain-Free 1-2-3 book for each kind of pain is kind of a cookbook about here's how you get rid of the pain. Or people can go to my website, and if they're looking for book notes and click on Pain-Free 1-2-3, the cliff notes for all of these treatments are on there for free as well on the website. So it'll just have a list of this, this, and this. But magnesium, also for migraines, the quickest way and most effective way, short of killing a person, to permanently eliminate a migraine attack is to give them 1 to 2 grams of magnesium IV. Cost for the magnesium, 5 to 10 cents. It will eliminate the attack within 15 minutes in over 85% of cases, much more effective than morphine.
Jacob, do they know why?
Well, because it changes the vasodilation thing. A lot of what's going on in the migraines, and there's arguments in terms of exactly which, but the classic theory is that there's a stretching of the blood vessels or relaxation that causes a pain. It's much more complex than that. Yeah. There's a muscular component. There's a vessel component. But the magnesium is a potent blood vessel dilator, and it probably dilates them out in other areas, and you get this kind of almost a steel effect or rebound effect. So we can speculate as why. We don't know why. But we know that magnesium is deficient in the vast majority of Americans. We know it's very critical for both muscle relaxation and blood vessel relaxation. And again, number of studies. If you look at the Pain Free 123 book, the scientific references for everything I'm saying is in there. but powerfully, powerfully effective.
Tell me, refresh my memory because it's been a while, but isn't magnesium also required sometimes in order to get calcium entry into cells in order to...
Potassium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the potassium cannot get into the cells if you have a magnesium deficiency. So you'll see a normal potassium level, but inside the cells where it's supposed to be, they're starved and the muscles are going into spasm and people are feeling weak as well.
Mm-hmm.
You need magnesium in conjunction with calcium to treat osteoporosis. In fact, let's take a moment on osteoporosis for folks. Fosamax, you know, getting jaw necrosis, you're seeing all kinds of problems, causing chronic widespread pain. The bisphosphonates, Fosamax, osteoporosis medications can trigger fibromyalgia, and the doctors won't attribute it. They don't know that's the cause, just like mevacor and cholesterol medications can. Did you know that there's a single nutrient that's almost twice as effective as Fosamax for osteoporosis? And it's strontium. It's a single mineral. This is studies out of the New England Journal of Medicine, even, which will almost never publish a positive study on a natural remedy. I don't think they knew that it was a nutrient when they did it. I hate to be a bit of a skeptic there, but just historically great journal, but not for natural stuff. But the strontium combines with boron, calcium, magnesium. And there's an excellent product called Bone Health, easy way to get it all. High-dose vitamin D. Vitamin D deficiency is a disaster in this country. Causing not just osteoporosis, but high blood pressure, an estimated 85,000 excess cancer deaths a year. And that's statistics out of the National Cancer Institute from just vitamin D deficiency from avoiding sunshine. So you want about 2,000 units of vitamin D. But you do these things way more effective than the medications for osteoporosis, much cheaper, much safer, much healthier.
Yeah, I should tell patients something after a long talk with them. I go, you know, I'm pretty smart, actually, but that's not enough. Because I'm not smart enough to understand how the whole body works.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I think we have learned over the years is we have a pretty good feel for what the body needs in order to function appropriately,
mm-hmm.
you know, mineral-wise and vitamin-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And so at least you guys should be taking all the stuff you need to make sure you get in your diet what you need, you know,
yep.
for all the system to work. And, you know, it's amazing, like that one thing that you say, that one simple, you know, I mean, being non-arrogant enough to admit you maybe you don't know how to do it, but you do know what the body needs to function properly.
Mm-hmm.
And just to have people take it and how much better they do. It's like simple.
Oh, it's just amazing. But what it was a shock to me when I realized, you know, because I read hundreds and hundreds of studies showing that these things work and are effective. And it was, why didn't we hear about it? And then I realized if something is not patentable, it's going to be cheap and therefore cannot go through the $400 million to $800 million FDA process to get approval for advertising it for use. And because of that, virtually everything that's natural is non-patentable and therefore cannot go through the FDA process, and therefore the doctors never hear about it. And it's no good guys and bad guys. It's just the economics of the system. But then that's our job, Michael. It's not the drug company's job to spend money to teach us that that magnesium's more effective or B6 is more effective than Imitrex. But that's our job as physicians to let the patients know. I'll throw a little other tidbit. You know the old-time treatment for migraines before Imitrex is caffeine, aspirin, and Tylenol.
Right.
It costs about 50 cents. And then when Imitrex came out at, you know, 15 bucks a pop or whatever, everybody switched to that. The studies actually show that the old treatment is more effective than Imitrex.
I believe that and stuff. That means it's a miracle. I mean, it has its bad side if it's too much, but mm-hmm. that's an interesting chemical in the body.
Yeah, and it's a useful tool. It's just good to have the rest of the tools in the toolkit. So what I want the listeners to get really is that just because your doctor doesn't know that something exists, all that tells you is that there's no real expensive drug for it, that the drug companies are spending the average $30,000 a year per doctor to get the information out. So, but there's often excellent science showing that these other things are very treatable. Arthritis, over 16,500 cancer deaths a year from Motrin family medications, NSAIDs. And that's considered a very conservative estimate. And these are unnecessary deaths because the natural remedies have been shown to be more effective and very safe. And there's a four-step program for eliminating arthritis that I have in my Pain-Free 1-2-3 book. And it just walks people through it. Or they can go to the Vitality101.com website. I think it's under resources. You'll see book notes. Go to Pain-Free 1-2-3. And it's the cliff notes are there. I guess I shouldn't tell people that. But, you know, it just says arthritis, take this, and this. And it's just the short and simple version for treatment of each different kind of pain.
Actually, when I used to refer patients, when you know, for whatever they, you know, something I couldn't take care of, where they thought I couldn't take care of it, is I used to tell them that, you know, here's a test to use if I don't know the guy. Mm-hmm. Go to the internet, find some stuff, you know, spend some time, come back and talk to me, you know, about what's on the internet, you know, what's available in science. Mm-hmm. And take some stuff to the doctor. If he didn't want to listen, talk to you about it, then you don't go to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he's open-minded, like, I don't know anything about this, and I don't know if it would work, but I'll look at your stuff for you.
Mm-hmm.
And he or she actually does.
Mm-hmm.
You potentially have a very good physician to work with you.
That's a brilliant test. That's a really good way to do it. Because, you know, like you say, if you say, hey, doc, here's a research study that shows a treatment for what I got, and the doctor says, I don't have time for that nonsense. You know, the best answer is, thank you for your honesty, have a nice day, and get out the door. Because that doctor doesn't have the time to bother keeping up with what he needs to know or she needs to know to take care of you.
So I tell my patients, hey, why don't you do the research for me, and I'll read it and tell you what's good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
I know, because I'm so busy with too many people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the patient gets excited because, hey, I'm like the doctor. I'm working with the doctor.
Yeah, and that's what I love about chronic fatigue syndrome fibromyalgia. I started as a general internist before moving into pain management and basically now CFS and fibro as a focus. But I never had my diabetics come in having done a literature search on their disease, even the cancer patients. But the CFS patients and fibromyalgia patients, they were like the best educated about their disease of anybody I know, and they would teach me, and they still teach me as we go along. They keep turning me on to new ideas and new possibilities. So it's really a remarkable thing. Michael, would you care to go through Shine?
If you'd like to, because I would like to hear more of your stuff because people need it.
Because yeah, I want people to know how to get well from their CFS or their fibromyalgia. And again, if you're exhausted and can't sleep, you ache all over, you've got these processes. So let's look at Shine. S is for sleep. And because the sleep center is not working, you can't get the 8 hours of sleep a night. In fact, if somebody comes in and says, oh, I can get 8 hours sleep, I just feel exhausted, they probably don't have fibromyalgia or CFS. They have something else going on. It's that much of a hallmark of the disease. So there are natural remedies. I like one called the Revitalizing Sleep Formula by Enzymatic Therapy. And let me note, by the way, I have a policy. I don't take money from any vitamin or pharmaceutical companies, and that's about $1 million a year roughly I'm turning down these days. And royalties for any products I make, I'll go to charity. It's just part of being a patient advocate to maintain objectivity. So you'll find I'm very passionate about certain things, and thumbs up or thumbs down.
Just because you care about people.
But, yeah.
I know it's probably a heretical thing to say, but you do.
Yeah. Well, that's what it's about. So for sleep, there's the Revitalizing Sleep Formula from Enzymatic Therapy and Doctor's Offices. Integrative Therapeutics makes a similar one. But it's wild lettuce, Jamaican dogwood, hops, theanine, valerian, and passion flower. Excellent for sleep. Most anybody with insomnia, 2 to 4 at bedtime, they'll sleep like a baby. But people with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia, the sleep disorder is so severe, you usually need a mix of national prescription therapies. So I start with the Revitalizing Sleep Formula. Most health food stores have it. My website at Vitality101 will have it. You can find it all over the internet as well. But add calcium and magnesium and maybe 0.5 milligram of melatonin at bedtime. 0.5 milligram is plenty. And then I would add an Ambien, Trazodone, Clonopin, Flexeril, Lyrica. There's a list of over 30 treatments on my website. If you click on treatment protocol, when you get to the sleep section, there's a mix of over 30 natural and prescription therapies. So you mix and match as needed to get the 8 hours of solid sleep you need a night.
So you can ask you a question? Because
mm-hmm.
opiate users have a severe sleep problem, even when they're on methadone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think it's the methadone's fault per se, because it sort of normalizes a lot of things. And I always found, you know, the best medicine, other than, you know, the natural herbs and stuff, mm-hmm. is actually trazodone.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems to last a long time. It's hard to abuse. I mean, it's kind of tricky how to learn how to use it because people want to take too much. But have you found that to be, like, a really, really good one for your patients, too?
You notice it was number two after Ambien.
Okay.
For sleep, I don't think Ambien is still the best, as long as you're not going at too high a dose.
Uh-huh.
But the 10 milligrams a night, it's very good, very well tolerated. The trazodone, 25 to 75 milligrams at bedtime. And the treatment protocol, the treatment checklist on the website, has the dosing and how to use it and side effects. I mean, it just teaches people exactly what they need to know to use these things. But it is very good because it's really non-addictive. It raises serotonin, so it helps decrease pain in the long term. And it's not a drug of abuse, again. It's just a very nice, effective medication that I can give people comfortably without worrying about it.
It's pretty cheap, too.
Yes.
Which is inexpensive.
Yeah, go generic when you have a chance. I mean, what I tell people, if they worry about the brand name versus generic, is the first time they get the prescription filled, get 20 tablets of the brand name one, just so they have a gold standard, and then switch to the generic. So if there's a problem, they'll know the difference.
Good point.
So move on to hormones, which are a biggie for folks, the H and Shine. Hormonal deficiencies are to be expected in chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. They're almost always present. It's important for people to recognize the hypothalamus controls, the pituitary controls your entire hormone system, and that you need to know that the blood tests, and you already know this, Michael, the blood tests are simply not reliable at diagnosing the hormonal problems and most others. The normal range for most blood tests, most doctors were never taught this in med school, where the normal range came from. I know I was given the impression that the world's experts got together, and if a test was in the normal range, they felt there was no problem. But there's no such panel of experts for most tests. All they do is they take 100 tests, 100 people test it, and they apply what's called two standard deviations. The 95% in the middle are defined as the normal range, and the highest and lowest 2.5% are defined as abnormal. So to make an analogy that's simpler, I like to use an analogy of shoe sizes. If I want a normal range for shoe sizes, I'd go to the mall, take the next 100 people that came by, get a normal range of, say, 3 to 13. If I was in Texas, maybe 3 to 14. Exactly. A couple babies came by, might get a normal range of 1 to 13. So we have this as a normal range. And I live in Hawaii, so say you come to Hawaii and you come to a party here and everybody leaves their shoes at the door, and you walk out to somebody else's shoes that look the same, but it happens to be some ladies and you've got a size 6 shoe now that you're wearing. And she's got a size 12. You go to the doctor and you say, I can't even get my foot in this dang thing because you're trying to get in a size 6. And the doctor says, size 6, Michael, it's in the normal range. It's perfectly normal. There's nothing wrong with your shoe. That other lady is falling off all the time with size 12 gets the same answer.
Yep.
And that's an exact analogy to what's going on. So the blood test gives important information, but it's not how you determine if the person needs the hormonal support. You tell by the symptoms. If you're tired, achy, weight gain, cold intolerant. If you have depression, if you have any of these kind of symptoms, you deserve a trial of natural armor thyroid by prescription because the synthetic thyroid doesn't work very well for most people. It doesn't have the proper hormone in it. And you adjust it to the dose that feels the best. If you feel shaky, hyper, racing heart, you cut back. And then you check the free T4 blood test, not the TSH, which is a meaningless test if there's hypothalamic dysfunction.
Right.
You check the free T4. If it's in the normal range, you're in a safe range, and you're fine. But that's how it's done now. It needs to be done, but most doctors just don't know how to do it. Blood test is normal. You're fine. You know?
I mean, just reiterate that because it's another one of my pet peeves. You know, is that, I mean, you know, if you go back to some of these like old surgery techs,
mm-hmm.
like doing surface anatomy and, you know, looking at people a different way, you know, the English guys, and you go, man, how they could tell all that stuff just looking at somebody? You know, it's from experience and, you know, and correlating things and keeping track of things, and they could diagnose things before they had blood tests pretty well.
Yeah, you could tell from across the room. I mean, I'm sitting on a bus, I can tell you that has low adrenal, has low thyroid.
Yeah,
you can tell by the look.
But we're just not, doctors nowadays just aren't trained in the clinical signs to do things, and it ends up hurting so many people,
mm-hmm.
especially with thyroid. Because I'm a Rhoda Barnes fan, and
mm-hmm.
I love, you know, morning temperature, okay? You know, an electronic thermometer five times in a row for, you know, 2 weeks, you know, and physiological things. things to do first and then go back and use the lab test to figure out where the normal should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just like they get so mad at you when you do that, the regular doctors.
Yes.
Yeah, but your patients are happier.
Yes,
that's all I care about.
Yep, bottom line. It works and it's safe. And it's just really is remarkable. I mean, they'll sit there and say, well, you can't get thyroid. You may get osteoporosis. Every study shows you keep the T4 in the normal range, you don't get the osteoporosis. You may get heart failure. The studies show you're twice as likely to get heart failure if your thyroid's a little bit on the low side than if it's on the high side. I mean, it's almost this, like, religious rant on the part of some people that the test is normal. It was funny. You know, I had this conversation with an oncologist once when he had a morning journal club thing, and he slammed his fist on the table. He said, "If you're not going to use the normal ranges, why bother using the test?" It's like, you know, Scott, there's one more piece of information. You know, if I see somebody with a size 14 shoe and they're not a clown, I'm going to start, and they say it's falling off, that adds useful information. So it's, people just need to know. You need to go by the symptoms. Adrenal, how do you tell you need adrenal support? Adrenal, it's worse. You have to be in the lowest 1 out of 100,000 before they'll call you abnormal on that. It has to be so low, it'll kill you.
Mm-hmm.
You're either totally healthy or it can kill you. There's no in-between for adrenal. And the way you tell adrenal is, you basically get irritable when you're hungry. It's a hypoglycemic kind of feed me now or I'll kill you. To me, if you see that, you get adrenal support. Recurrent respiratory infections, suggestive of low adrenal, crashing with stress, low blood pressure, dizzy when standing. I like to use hydrocortisone by prescription, Cortef, up to 20 milligrams a day. Very, 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 very safe long-term. When you look at the research over that, very toxic. But there's a product called Adrenal Stress End, which has adrenal glandulars, licorice, pantothenic acid, vitamin C, and a number of other things that help support the adrenal glands. And it's a very nice, natural, easy way for people to help their adrenals to heal. And also a psychological shift. Everything is not a crisis, much as media would have you believe it these days. You know, look out your window, not at the news, to see what reality is going on. And then estrogen, testosterone, using the bioidenticals, which are now under attack again by the FDA, through the drug companies. Bioidentical hormones, estrogen, testosterone, very, very helpful. That's a whole other show in itself. Infections, especially yeast, viral infections. If you have chronic sinusitis, spastic colon, knock out the yeasts, knock out small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Both of those problems will usually go away. Nutritional support, though. It's people say, which vitamin or mineral do I need? And the answer is all of them.
That's right.
And the cofactors and the amino acids. And people get tired of being part of what they call the handful club, where they're taking handfuls of pills all day. So a very simple way for people in general, and include CFS or healthy people both, to get overall outstanding nutritional support is use the vitamin powders. Because this way you take one drink, it replaces over 35 tablets a day, and it just makes it easy for people.
Particularly for women, because they hate to.
Yeah, and
more than men.
Yeah, and I don't like taking a handful either. I mean, I'm pretty easy with pills with 35. Why bother? Kind of thing. So there's a product called the Energy Revitalization System is my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
One pill, one capsule. There's one capsule because if you have B vitamins in a powder, at adequate dose, it tastes miserable. So those that are put in a capsule. But then you take the one drink, literally replaces over 35 tablets a day. And it's funny, I lecture at the International American Association for Clinical Nutritionists frequently. That's 400 of the world's experts, MDs, and the rest on nutrition. And I put out the challenge that if they can get what's in the one drink in less than 35 tablets, I'll give them $50 a piece, and they couldn't. It's just, you know, it's just a really good way to get outstanding nutritional support for everybody. But there's a nutrient called ribose that we just published a study on, which is amazing.
See, can we say ribose? Because I think you and I have to talk again, if it's okay with you.
Your turn. Sorry, my bad.
You know, so, because that is an amazing thing, because I was looking up, you know, my metabolism and things.
Uh-huh.
But I think that deserves a little more time than 1 minute, you know,
mm-hmm.
Other than it's amazingly effective, as you said. But I want to say, but in your book, you have, in one of the appendix, you have references to where people go to get stuff, don't you?
Yeah, well, they can go to vitality101.com. For doctors, I give the names of the different companies we use to get a wholesale. But most of the stuff we talk about is readily available all over the place, health food stores, all over the Internet, and again, at www.vitality101.com.
And I would just mention from my experience that, you know, if you have, like Jacob recommends a source, it's probably a good idea to go there if you can, because sometimes I don't think you always get what you buy in health food stores.
Oh, the quality and control is awful.
You know, you don't know it, and then you think it doesn't work. And the worst thing, you know, it's like giving medicines. I tell people, I said, like, I'm going to give you a piddling low dose. They go, Yeah, but everybody else gives you like 10 times. I said, I know they are, but you're going to get sick, and then you want to take this medicine. It might be a good one for you.
Mm-hmm.
So take this little piddling dose and see if you get sick. Mm-hmm. If you don't get sick, I'll raise it a little bit, and then, you know, maybe we'll take have to save a cheap, inexpensive medicine. Long history of use, so we know what the side effects are, long-term detriment. There's a new one we don't know anything about that costs a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just get used to it first, because a lot of times the side effects will go away if you start, as you know, if you start small doses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the patients go, well, that makes sense. How come my doctor didn't tell me? He said, don't ask me. Ask him.
Your drug rep didn't tell them.
You know, I mean, I tell you, know, you're a very important person, so we need to be careful what we do with you until you can, you know, fully take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We're just like the guide, the coach, and things. But unfortunately, we're going to be running out of time, but I would love to have you come back in the near future if you could, so we can finish up with Shine and talk a little bit about your pain book.
I'd be happy to.
Because I just seen, you know, so many patients are so, you know, the doctors have taught them to be failure-orientated because they're so linear, that you just see all these people that could actually be helped, you know, help themselves or go somewhere that would help them. But they're just, like, so disappointed and, you know, and so pessimistic that they just get stuck in the system forever. And if you just get these people who care and get them involved in the treatment, they all get well.
Well, fibromyalgia and fatigue centers around the country can get people the help they need.
So go to the www.vitality101, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Jacob, I want to thank you. I know it's early in Hawaii, but if you could stay in the line for 1 second after we shut off so I could talk to you for a moment, I'd appreciate it.
Be happy to, Michael, and it's wonderful talking to you today.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you, and you guys go out and get his books. You know, I guess, what is it, Pain 123?
Pain 3, 1, 2, 3.
From fatigue to fantastic. They're clearly written. Seem to be technically accurate. And, you know, what the main part is, he has little charts in there that you can actually keep track of what you do and decide what you need to do based on logic and rationality, which is sort of a nice way to do it. So, so next week, we're going to be, let's see what the schedule here. Actually, I don't know what I'm doing next week. I'll have to let you all know. So, the music will be off in a sec. But y'all take care. Have a good time. And go to Dr. Tuttlebaum's website.
Thank you for joining Dr. Michael John Kell on Mind, Brain, and Body. Please tune in next Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another edition of Mind, Brain, and Body, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.